Good afternoon. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, May 12, 2026. Let's begin with today's top stories. The first headline reads, From Jim Dye, J-I-M, last name Dye, D-E-Y. I think you pronounce it Dye. Grant Pipeline to stay open as county audit drags on. The continuing failure of the Champaign County Executive's Office to complete the county's 2024 audit has seriously jeopardized access to state and federal grant funds aimed at assisting lower-income individuals and families. But after weeks of trying to address the issue, Dalitso Sulamoyo, Executive Director of the Regional Planning Commission, said he's been assured by state officials overseeing the grant process that his agency will not be put on stop pay, quote-unquote, status, because it is caught in a political scrum, not of its making. As a consequence, the agency will continue to be able to apply for programs providing emergency and transitional housing and specialized transportation for seniors and individuals with disabilities, and Head Start educational programs. The potential loss of millions of dollars in federal and state grant funds is a spillover from a long-standing turf war between county board members and the county auditor's office. In May 2025, the board stripped responsibility for the 2024 audit from auditor George Danos and transferred it to the office of elected Executive Steve Summers and his top assistant, Michelle Jett. Board members said at the time they were concerned the auditor's office would not complete the 2024 audit by fall of 2025. But under Summers Jett, the audit remains unfinished, further exacerbating tensions among board members divided over the wisdom of reassigning audit duties. Sulamoyo was busy last week consulting with small groups of county board members to avoid Open Meetings Act requirements. He briefed them on the potential grant funding problems and told them that State Senator Paul Faraci, Democrat from Champaign, and State Representative Carol Ammons, Democrat from Urbana, were lobbying state officials to get what was described as a workaround on the rules. Sulamoyo said he met Friday with grant providers in Springfield, where he won a reprieve. We do not have any funders that have said we cannot apply for any grants, he said. The RPC has roughly 150 grants and contracts with agencies that fund social welfare programs. They cover everyone from children to adults and issues that range from education and transportation to workforce training and energy assistance. Sulamoyo told board members that as delays over the 2024 audit ground on, he had been working with state agencies to explain the problem. He warned that it threatened to grow worse when the state's fiscal year ends June 30th. The separate question now is when the audit that was supposed to be completed months ago will be finished. Sulamoyo said representatives from audit firm Clifton Larson Allen estimate completion by July 30th. Champaign County Board Member Brett Pugh, whose District 11 includes parts of North Champaign and Urbana, praised Sulamoyo and RPC staffers for doing God's work in trying to keep the grant pipeline open. He said he was concerned his constituents would suffer. I have the poorest district in the county, and my constituents rely quite heavily on RPC programs, he said. Pugh, who opposed the audit transfer, characterized the move as one more rushed, unforced error. Board Democrats and Republicans have clashed repeatedly with Danos over tax and budget issues. His critics tried to persuade voters in 2024 to abolish the auditor's office and defeat his reelection bid, falling short on both counts. They subsequently transferred Danos's small staff to the executive's office and responded to complaints about audit delays by saying Danos's failings caused the problem. Sulamoyo declined to comment on the controversy, When two elephants fight, it's the ants that suffer, he said. I don't want to get involved in that. Jim Dye is a staff writer for the News Gazette. He can be reached by email at jdey@newsgazette.com. The next headline reads, which is just a photo, colorful photo, front and center, front cover of the paper. It's of a man in a gray suit shaking hands with a young Caucasian male in like a blue short sleeve shirt. And he's in a building, and he's in front of a bunch of people sitting and clapping in the audience, looking on, smiling. The caption reads, Judah Christian School's Jackson Dalby, Dalbey, accepts a $5,000 scholarship check Monday from Hickory Point Bank President Dan Marker during the Champaign-Urbana Bank Branch's inaugural Merit Scholar Program celebration. Hickory Point celebrated 21 area high school seniors, chosen based on criteria including class rank, SAT-ACT scores, and essays, with an award presentation Monday inside the bank's downtown Champaign headquarters. Dalby was the top prize recipient among the group and is graduating with a 5.46 GPA. That photo is taken by Rob Lacates for the News Gazette. There'll be more coverage on that in A2, so we'll get to that story in just a moment. The next headline reads, also a group photo. It's of a few people, men, standing, and 6 males taking a photograph together, smiling for the camera. St. Joseph Ogden Jr., offensive lineman, Cameron Wagner, poses for photos with SJO, St. Joseph Ogden, football coaches on Monday shortly after Wagner announced he would play college football at Oregon, starting with the 2027 season. The four-star recruit picked Oregon ahead of Illinois, Notre Dame, and Wisconsin. Wagner explains his choice in C1. A podcast of his interview can be found at newsgazette.com. This photo was taken by Nora Mayberry Daniels for the News Gazette. The next headline reads, Champaign County Court, Urbana man gets probation for sexual abuse of a minor. 30-year-old's cognitive impairment cited as a complicating factor. This article is written by Luke Taylor. Luke can be reached by email at ltaylor@newsgazette.com. This article is based out of Urbana. An Urbana man who pleaded guilty to aggravated sexual abuse of a minor under the age of 13 has been sentenced to 48 months of probation. Tyler Wilson Hardy, 30, also had been charged with two other counts of the same Class 2 felony, but they were dismissed as part of the plea agreement. His sentence was decided by Champaign County Judge Roger Weber, who heard victim impact statements in April, then further argument from the defense and prosecution on Monday. Both Weber and Assistant State's Attorney Joel Fletcher agreed that it was a difficult case for the court, in part due to the defendant's cognitive impairment. Fletcher said that this impairment could mean that a harsh sentence would do little to deter Wilson Hardy from committing a similar act in the future. However, Fletcher emphasized the severity of the offense itself, saying Wilson Hardy put a child through hell and left her with consequences she would feel the rest of her life. Wilson Hardy was charged in December 2024 after a member of the victim's family reported to the Urbana Police Department that the suspect had exposed himself to and fondled the victim. Wilson Hardy had written and other items that were consistent with the report and with statements he made when interviewed, according to state's attorney, Julia Reitz. Fletcher said that Wilson Hardy's response to a sex offender evaluation showed that he continued to minimize what he had done. He admits that he touched her breasts, her buttocks, but not for purposes of sexual gratification, Fletcher said. I don't know what that means. Fletcher said he would prefer incarceration in the case, but recognized that the defendant's cognitive impairment might make the judge prefer other options. Public defender Elizabeth Pollock said that Wilson Hardy wasn't aware of the potential harm of his actions when he committed the offense. She described him as functioning at the level of an early teenager intellectually and said that while he may have realized the conduct was inappropriate due to the age difference, he was convinced this was a consensual relationship. He believed they were in love, Pollock said. Pollock described this as almost a crime of opportunity since Wilson Hardy and the victim were related and living in the same home. She said that he had no prior offenses and that he has completely complied with court orders and his GPS monitoring since he was arrested. Additionally, she said that Wilson Hardy is no longer living at the same place he was when he was arrested. Pollock requested a community-based sentence and individual treatment for him. Weber said that the guilty plea was significant in showing the defendant recognized wrongdoing and in preventing the victim and those close to her from having to testify in court and face a judge and jury. He said that he also heavily considered the fact that this was the defendant's only offense. The 48 months of probation will include treatment and counseling. Wilson Hardy is also barred from contact with the victim or with any school she attends. He will also be required to register as a sex offender for the rest of his life. The next headline reads, Unit 4 Schools, Ponce's Cabinet Taking Shape. Board approves two-year deals for all four hires. This article is written by Jeff D'Alessio. Jeff can be reached by email at jdalessio@newsgazette.com. This article is based out of Champaign. 2 weeks after approving the hires of the first four members of new Superintendent Giovanni Ponce's cabinet, the Unit 4 School Board on Monday signed off on the contracts worth a combined $900,000 in 2026-2027. Deputy Superintendent Dan Casillas, the popular lone holdover from the 2025-26 leadership team, will earn $240,000 annually as Ponce's number two. The three outside hires, Chief of Schools Alicia Bell, Chief Human Resources Officer Alejandro Gomez, and Chief Academic Officer Jake Flowers, will each be paid $220,000 according to the terms of their contracts. All four contracts are for 2 years, and like Ponce's three-year deal that will pay him $375,000 in 2026-2027, come with fully paid family medical insurance. The lone member of former Superintendent Sheila Boozer's cabinet to top $200,000 in salary this school year was Linda Metkowski, who is in her final weeks as a district's chief financial officer at $217,978.13. Boozer herself was due $252,209.12 in 2025-26, which she is being paid while on a year-long administrative leave. From where I sit, I believe that we should pay people very well in this district, and we should expect a lot of them, Board President Tony Bruno said during Monday's meeting. And so I'm okay with these salaries. I think that they're commensurate with the expectations we have for what these people should deliver. If they don't deliver, then we'll revisit their employment. But I think for right now, we should treat them well and expect a lot. There was a little pushback from fellow board members, with Grace King casting the only no vote on Flowers' contract, noting that upon viewing this candidate's experience, I believe that the salary should be reconsidered. I don't think all the chief salaries all need to be the same, she added. After joining the six other members in approving Casillas' contract, Justin Michael Hendricks said he was holding his vote on the three others, citing similar concerns as the ones he expressed at the meeting prior. Ponce's leadership team still has three vacancies, Chief of Student Support and Access, Chief Business Administration Officer, and Chief of Communications and Community Engagement. To find what Ponce called the most talented people for the seven positions, Unit 4 enlisted the help of the same Texas-based firm it hired to conduct the search that ended with the Fairfax, Virginia County Chief of Schools' own hiring on February 10th. The board approved paying up to $128,000 for JG Consulting to assist with the search for the seven new administrators for fewer than made up Boozer's cabinet. Also on Monday, the board approved the appointment of Brian Whipperman as the successor to Sam Turner as Dr. Howard Elementary principal. Whipperman is currently in his first year as associate and summer school principal at Champaign's Jefferson Middle School. After spending 14 years working in New York schools, he served as vice president of education at Peoria's Children's Home Association of Illinois, as CEO of the Normal-based nonprofit that now goes by Lifelong Access, and as a sales executive at Bloomington's Diamond Brothers Insurance, where he worked for 5 months in 2025 before joining Unit 4. The next headline reads, "Top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rosso." Congratulations to the first class of Hickory Point Bank Merit Scholars from Champaign-Urbana. The high school seniors were honored Monday night at Hickory Point's downtown Champaign headquarters, where family, friends, and mayors saluted the high achievers and the after-hours setup inside the bank. For 7 years, Hickory Point has been celebrating merit scholars in the Decatur area. Monday's inaugural CU ceremony, emceed by our Brian Barnhart, was a hit with all involved. "We hope to do this for years and years to come," Hickory Point Director of Client Experience Carla Miller said. Students from Academy High, Centennial, Champaign Central, Judah Christian, St. Thomas More, and Urbana were chosen based on criteria including class rank and SAT-ACT scores. The application process included essays, too. Each of the 21 students received $100 from Hickory Point. The overall winner, as determined by a bank selection committee, received $5,000, with first runner-up getting $2,500, second runner-up $1,500, and third runner-up $1,000. Meet the award winners. From Academy High, Megan Fry, Brianna Patton, Centennial, Riti Bosal, Nia Bolton, Tam Doe, Layla Tafik, or Tafik. From Champaign Central, Reese Bowman, Sachin Bolero, Andres Bras, Rahul Shekari. From Judah Christian, Jackson Dalby, Mackenzie Jackson, Dominic Mortensen, Michael Oshimokon. From St. Thomas More, Caitlin Ballard, Philip Lee, Hadassah Mayombo, and Elena Schmitz. From Urbana, Alania Lee, John Lee, Lourdes Reynolds, and congratulations to all of them. There's a photo of the group standing outside, smiling for the camera in honor of their receiving the awards. Congratulations to all of them. That photo is taken by Rob Lacates for the News Gazette. Questions, comments, suggestions, you can always email Jim Rosso for this column. His email address is jrossow@newsgazette.com. Next up, history. Area history. In 1926, the drill field at the University of Illinois is nice and sloppy after the Champaign Fire Department flooded it so freshman students can slip and slide there tonight during a tug of war and the mud flinging and mud wrestling that will follow. The evening begins at the Illinois Union with a snake dance to the drill field. The highlight of the fracas, of course, comes when the freshmen burn their hated class headgear, also referred to as verdant headdresses. In 1976, the tradition of having a principal speaker at University of Illinois commencement exercises will not be continued this year in order to shorten the show and minimally to save money, according to Chancellor J.W. Pedelson. Instead of a speaker, Pedelson will preside over the ceremony, and University President John E. Corbally will greet the graduates, their families, and friends. In 2011, Champaign County home sales rose slightly in April, but a drop in the average selling price dented overall sales volume. The average selling price in April was $121,680, down 17% from $146,756 a year ago, according to the Champaign County Association of Realtors Multiple Listing Service. And international history. Today's highlight. On May 12, 2008, a devastating 7.9 magnitude earthquake in China's Sichuan province left more than 87,000 people dead or missing. That was on May 12, 2008. Also on this date, in 1780, the besieged city of Charleston, South Carolina, surrendered to British forces in one of the worst American defeats of the Revolutionary War. And in 1846, the pioneers of the Donner Party left Independence, Missouri, on the Oregon Trail, beginning their ill-fated attempt to migrate to California. The next headline reads, Canvas cyber attack. U of I finals week resumes with system back online. This article is written by Jana Wiersema. Jana can be reached by email at jwiersema@newsgazette.com. This article is based out of Urbana. Almost a week after academic life at the University of Illinois ground to a screeching halt due to a cyber attack on learning management system Canvas, final exams have resumed, albeit with some rescheduling. Provost John Coleman announced at about noon Saturday that Canvas at Illinois was back online after the Technology Services Department performed integrity and assurance testing to the extent possible, quote-unquote. All exams previously scheduled for Friday, May 8th, were moved to Sunday, May 10th, with alternatives available for students and instructors who cannot make the switch work. Course instructors will be able to assign a new due date for any final assignments, projects, or other final evaluations that were originally due on Friday or Saturday, Coleman added. Any final exams or projects originally planned for Monday through Friday will remain as scheduled, unless otherwise noted by your instructor. As always, instructors continue to have the discretion to make changes they deem appropriate to meet course objectives. He acknowledged that the situation was not ideal due to Sunday religious services as well as Mother's Day. However, this course of action has emerged as the best option among a list of potential solutions, each of which had complications and downsides, Coleman said. We've heard significant concerns from our students about extending finals past Thursday of this coming week. Steve Daly, CEO of Instructure, the vendor for Canvas, said in a message on the company's website that data involved in the breach included information such as usernames, email addresses, course names, enrollment information, and messages. Core learning data, course content, submissions, credentials, was not compromised, he said. We're still validating all findings, but we want to be clear about what we understand was and wasn't affected. Daly also apologized, stating that users deserve more consistent communication from Instructure following the breach. And next up, let's take a brief look at our weather forecast over the next few days. Today, the high will be 79, sunny in the morning, then becoming partly sunny, breezy, warmer. Wednesday, the high will be 65, the low will be 49, sunny, breezy, cooler, northwest winds 15 to 25 miles per hour with gusts up to 35 miles per hour, so a bit windy tomorrow. Thursday, the high will be 68, the low is 43, sunny. Friday, the high is 75, the low is 52, partly sunny with a 50% chance of showers. Saturday, warmer still. The high will be 83, the low is 59, mostly sunny, a 30% chance of showers, and warmer. The next headline reads, another photo from the Hickory Point Bank distribution of awards for students. This headline says, another job well done. And it's the same man, gray suit, shaking the hands of a young female student. The caption reads, Urbana High School's Elania Lee shakes hands with Hickory Point Bank President Dan Marker at Monday's Merit Scholar Award presentation. Lee ranked second in her school's class of 271 students with a 5.809 GPA. And again, that photo was taken by Rob Lacates for the News Gazette. The next headline reads, One Big Beautiful Bill Act. As Illinoisans lose federal food aid, independent grocers face debt and store closure. This article is written for News at capitalnewsillinois.com by Jenna Schweikart and UIS Public Affairs Reporting, or PAR. As households across Illinois brace to lose their federal food assistance this month, grocery stores, especially independent grocers across the state, are preparing for the devastating effects of decreased spending. For some independent grocers whose profit margins average 2%, a decrease, in consumer spending associated with cuts to the Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program, or SNAP, could lead to store closures. Changes to SNAP from the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, also known as H.R. 1, mean thousands of Illinois households will lose access to their SNAP benefits in May if they did not fulfill new work requirements or submit for an exemption. Grocery stores operate on some of the slimmest profit margins of any business because combined with high operating costs, they sell almost exclusively low-priced items and so must sell a lot of product to make up for small sales, said Craig Nornburns, a fourth-generation Illinois grocer. We're in what we call the penny business, meaning that like we count and we survive on the penny, Nornburns said. And because grocers deal with many perishable items, it's very easy to lose that profit, he added. Nornburns, N-O-R-R-E-N-B-E-R-N-S, is a member of the Illinois Retail Merchants Association, which represents independent and corporate grocers of all sizes. Retailers have the narrowest profit margin of all business sectors, IRMA President Rob Carr said. Within that, grocers have the narrowest profit margins, averaging between 1 and 2%. Tariffs and fuel prices have a major impact on retailers, who deal in transporting, packing, and importing a lot of products, Carr said. Add stiff competition to that, and SNAP cuts will put grocers at real risk for closure, Carr said. When communities lose independent grocers, it impacts their ability to access food, especially products like fresh produce. It might actually have the inverse effect of driving more people into supplemental programs like SNAP, Carr said. Nornburns has been working in his family's business for 15 years and now owns 4 independent grocers in southern Illinois, including the space his great-grandfather originally opened as a butcher shop in the 1930s. And there's a photograph of a smiling Caucasian male at a grocery store. The caption reads, Craig Nornburns, a fourth-generation Illinois grocer, poses in one of the 4 independent groceries he owns in southern Illinois. And that photo is provided by Nornburns. I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been part 1 of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, May 12, 2026. I'll be back to read part 2 with you shortly. It's always a pleasure to read with you. Thank you for listening, and have a wonderful day.